Hello and a very warm welcome to Radio Prague with me, David Vaughan. 40 years ago this week, on the 8th of April 1975, Václav Havel sent an open letter to Czechoslovakia's president, Gustav Husák. The letter was to become one of the key documents of dissent during the period of normalization. It outlined the creeping fear, apathy and humiliation faced by Czechs and Slovaks amid the cultural stagnation in the first years after the Soviet-led invasion of 1968. Today times are very different, but the warnings in the letter remain as relevant as ever. Azadeh Mohammadi is a Prague-based student from Iran who came across the letter in Farsi translation and found many parallels with her own experiences growing up in Iran over 3 decades after it was written. She decided to find out more, and part of that process was a radio discussion that she recorded about the letter's legacy, with Barbara Day and Vera Langerová, who have both studied Havel's work closely, and Omid Nikvarjam, a Prague-based Iranian journalist and translator. In a few minutes, we shall be hearing that discussion, but we'll start with Azadeh herself, talking to me about what Havel's letter to Husák means to her personally.
My name is Azadeh Mohammadi. At the moment, I study at the drama faculty in Prague, directing of theatre, and this is what I'm doing mainly now.
And how did you come to be in the Czech Republic, and where are you from?
I'm from Iran, and I was living in Dubai, and, well, I was looking for English-speaking schools, for acting school, and that's why I ended up here.
I think you found a lot of parallels with your own country, with Iran, didn't you, that you probably didn't expect to find in the Czech Republic?
No, I was surprised to see a very different condition from my country, but at the same time, very similar experiences in the history of the countries.
What you're talking about in particular is the experience that Czechoslovakia had of communism in the 1970s and 80s, which I think that you see a lot of similarities with the situation in Iran today.
We didn't experience the communist, but the Islamic Republic in Iran had the effect of the country and nation in a way that it made me think about it, that yes, there is some similarities between the experiences of the nations.
And that brings me to Václav Havel and his letter to Gustav Husák in 1975. Mm-hmm. This was at a time when Husák had just become president of Czechoslovakia. Havel's position was becoming increasingly difficult, wasn't it? And he really was pushed right onto the margins of society as a dissident. And when you read the letter, you found a lot of points that echoed things that you'd experienced yourself or that you'd felt were very similar in Iran. Can you maybe outline one or two of these things?
I would like to tell you first about my first impulse when I read the letter. Well, I've read it here in the library of Václav Havel, and I found a translated text in Farsi, which was so pleasant to me to read it. And what was so pleasant, again, was when I was reading the letter, I was feeling an Iranian wrote it, which it was a huge impact on me.
And so in what way was this? What were the specific things that you thought, oh, that is exactly what I've experienced at home?
What was very interesting for me first, how absurd lived this nation, the life, the absurdity of this whole situation, which Václav Havel mentioned in his writings, because I personally experienced it myself since I was a child in the family and then in society at my school or anywhere outside.
And this sense of absurdity, is it to a large extent because of the gap between the world you're being told officially that you live in and the real world that you actually are living in?
Simply, I couldn't be what I was as a person, as an individual in my society. I couldn't express myself as I was, because I was always feeling there is a danger if I show my real face. This experience happens automatically in your head, that you have to censor yourself when you open the door of your home and you walk into the street.
Another thing that Havel talks about very eloquently in his letter to Husák is how people
out of an instinct of self-preservation, they play along with the regime, don't they? And you become far more introverted. You no longer engage publicly in public life in the country that you're living in.
It's funny, exactly the same, unfortunately, in the experience of our life in Iran as well. Because you live in that society physically, but you feel you kept outside, as if they have their own party and you are the neighbor who just can hear the sound of people having fun. So to me, this is how it works. I can picture it for myself.
And another thing that Havel talks about is the way that, because of this strange sort of detachment, in a sense, history stops. Society is no longer moving, is it? It becomes very stagnant. And then you can't have that sort of natural and healthy sort of interaction, both of ideas and also of a country with its own reflection on its own history.
Yeah, because it turns to a loop that however you try to improve, then you come back to the zero point again.
And I know that the field that interests you most is the field of culture, because obviously you're involved in theatre. And again, Havel, in his letter to Husak, he warns of the impact of censorship, of what ostensibly seems to be only a minor inconvenience. If a magazine is forced to close down that was only read by a few thousand people, you think, big deal, what does it mean? But he actually points out that culture is the way that a society can look at itself and reflect on itself and see itself in the mirror and see itself critically and then move on. And a second point that Havel makes in the letter is that because of this degree of censorship and self-censorship, the kind of culture you get, the kind of plays that you get performed or the kind of films that you get made in that society, they may be well made, they may be quite good, but they're not actually engaging with reality. They're escapism. And if anything, they're reinforcing the status quo.
Yeah, and I also would like to mention something that I experienced as a foreigner here. I was watching a commercial film which was made in Czechoslovakia during the communist time. And it was showing a shop, a grocery shop, full of products. All the products were so beautiful, attractive to your eyes. And it was exactly opposite of the reality.
This is in the sort of 1970s, 1980s.
Exactly, exactly. And if I want to go back to Iran, if I want to bring a few examples for you, yeah, definitely, again, as you mentioned, people were making some artistic works or they were talking about some issues in the society or the newspapers or magazines. They were shut down after a while, and this is what we experienced a lot in our country, unfortunately. And so what happens, because the artist wants to survive somehow, so he tries to adjust himself or to show that he's adjusted to the need of the government. So what happens, it's a direct effect of the quality of the art.
And I'd like to ask you finally about this discussion program that you've made and about why you chose to make it. I think it's a very interesting reflection on the parallels between Czechoslovakia and Iran.
Well, it was a part of my studies. I wanted to make a radio production, and my supervisor, Mrs. Lida Angelova, who is a very active director in the theater and also radio, she asked me, okay, you experienced drama in radio, what else you would like to experience in radio field? And I just paid some attention of what I need, which is finding the common points for me as a foreigner in this country and towards the people of this country. And it comes from my direct experience, how I feel close to the people who lived the communist era, even though I really haven't seen what happened in this country those days. I just heard about it or read about it. But because of my experience in my country, I can just communicate with this matter.
So you find yourself identifying with people who are actually a generation older than yourself.
Exactly. I can just, I have much more things to talk about with them.
So Azadeh, let's listen to the program that you made, which starts with you introducing your three guests. But before we start, I'd like you to say a little bit about some of the music that you've mixed in to this discussion.
Well, I chose Mohsen Namjoo, who is an Iranian musician. He's really great, and he's living out of the country right now. And the Czech Karel Kryl, who was writing protest songs, he was against the system. And even when he got back to the country, he was also criticizing Václav Havel's system somehow, even though they were friends. So that was the interesting thing about him as well.
So, let's listen.
Bratříčku, nevzlikej, neplítvej slzami, na dávky polikej.
In this program, I will have three guests. Mrs. Barbara Day, who is a founder member of the Prague Society for International Cooperation. Since 70s of the last century, she's been also translating from Czech to English, mainly about history, theater and art.
Hi, Barbara.
Hello, Asadeh.
Mrs. Vera Langerova, a film critic in Czech Republic, also is focused on Asian and Middle Eastern cinema, such as Iran.
Hi, Vera.
Hi, Azadeh.
And our Iranian guest, Mr. Omid Nikfarjam, a journalist and literary translator at Radio Free Europe.
Welcome, Omid.
Hello, thanks.
Dear Barbara, I would like to thank you first for being with us in this program. Could you please tell us briefly about Václav Havel and the way he was using his thoughts in his artistic works?
Well, Havel was very clear-sighted right from the beginning. He didn't have any illusions about the communist system, and he knew what it was like to be excluded. So instead of being bitter about this, he actually understood what was the quality of the absurd. In England, you had the absurd at that time, which was just an intellectual concept. But he saw that his own life was absurd, that the system was absurd. And he was able to present this in his plays. Not only that, but he knew it was important to be active, to be proactive, to resist the regime, to resist the system. And he warned people that freedom wasn't something you could just wait for. You couldn't sit around waiting for it. You actually had to get up and do something. You had to work and provide something concrete as a result of your work.
Why did Václav Havel write this letter to Dr. Gustav Husák back in 1975?
Well, several years had gone past since the Prague Spring and the invasion in 1968. And he saw how society was stagnating, how people who'd been very much involved in public life were now turning in on themselves. They were interested only in their private life.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very concerned that this was just getting more and more atrophied. And he wanted to open up the discussion. He wanted to provoke some kind of openness, some kind of discussion about what was happening in society.
And how did Václav Havel see the effect of censorship on truth?
He took an example from his own experience, gave the example of a play that might be put on in this society.
Mm-hmm.
And superficially, it could look like a very good play. It would be well written, well constructed. It would be funny. People would enjoy it. It would even, on the surface, it would seem to deal with some of the problems of society. Yet all the time it would be within these limits that the authorities had set. It would be narrowed down to what he called banality, triviality.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just a kind of imitation of a play. It wasn't serious. And he saw this kind of banalization, this aesthetics of banality that he called it, much more dangerous than political propaganda, because people would be taken in by it. And then there was the question of who was the censor. It could be the official censor, or it could be the writer himself. It could be the writer who knew what he could do within these limits.
Mm-hmm.
And either subconsciously or even deliberately, he would stay within those limits. And that was a very pernicious kind of censorship.
Vera, Václav Havel talked about the crisis of human identity by a system that requires a man to be something other than he is. How do you express it for those past days and compare it to nowadays with the freedom of the society?
It's very interesting to read Havel's letter to Husak today. Paradoxically, it looks like situation in communism was easier because there was a system we could blame for our moral failures. And this doesn't mean I want to defend totality we lived in anyhow. We know today that to recover morally after the fall of totality is extremely difficult because the paternal state decides about everything in your life and will never give you a chance to become adult, means responsible for everything you perform in your life. As it was possible to excuse everything by unhuman state and its brutal methods, the state asking only for the agreement and the silence, there wasn't an urgent need to intimate questions posed to ourselves about the morality of our deeds. The sinner was versatile and omnipresent, and the clear line between they and us has disappeared after the revolution, and we have a free choice to look for the sources of our morality. If it's not a religion, what is it? Universal humanism, which can tell us all the people are the same and deserves to live in this and that conditions, but cannot tell us that, I don't know, leaving your family is a sin. There are thousands of questions dealing with morality we can never cease to ask, facing the immense corruption and moral immunity of the state representatives today. And communism was like an anestheticum, made you calm and immobile, in inner but also in outer sense. Its collective character expressed as working masses diminished your individuality to minimum, as it was ideologically demanded and enemies were accused to bourgeois individualism.
What was happening to the artists who were acting out of this framework as defined by the state?
Of course, to be artist in totalitarian state, you have to be in an approximate accordance with the ideological role of art. In the last decade of communist Czechoslovakia, when I have lived, there were certain people to write books, shoot films, etc., serving to ideological and political needs of the state. All other artistic stratas around the center demonstrated the different distance to the ideology. The situation was strictly different in the 70s after the occupation of Czechoslovakia by Soviet troops, when everybody had to declare the agreement or disagreement with a so-called the help of brothers, as the invasion was renamed. And this was the time of many forced and unforced departures, immigration to the West. I was very surprised when I was reading the memoirs of Miloš Forman, the worldwide known Czech film director, author of Unforgettable Amadeus. He was comparing the Hollywood bosses and their methods to the communists, especially in clear power language. In communism, we didn't want to hear things like that at that time. But today, we have a chance to compare. And the next worldwide famous immigrant is Milan Kundera. He and his books were able to convert all the feelings, thoughts, memories of Czech and Slovak people to fascinating stories. He, as well as Karel Kryl, very famous singer, whose songs became the everlasting hits of all the generations, were not very happy with post-revolutionary Czechoslovakia. They were able to perceive all the flops of newly installed democracy in the face of so-called wild capitalism in early 90s. But unfortunately, there was no social willingness to listen to criticism that time.
Omid, what are the similarities between this letter by Havel to Husak and the current situation of Iran?
You know, the last 10 years, especially the period after the so-called 2009 disputed election in Iran, is the period that, in my opinion, is very much like the situation that Havel describes in his letter to Husak. You know, the shadow of censorship has always been over the heads of the Iranians, especially the artists, filmmakers, writers, or intellectuals. But after that election, the state tried hard and to a great extent succeeded to widen the scope of censorship and self-censorship because of the fear it created among people. Not that it was all created all of a sudden the day after the election. You know, since Ahmadinejad came to power, he pushed the society toward this atmosphere. So what happened after the election was only the continuation of what was going on before. And what happened, we can sum it up exactly with the expression that Havel uses in his letter, the aesthetics of banality, which Barbara eloquently explained.
Yes.
And this happened more in the Iranian cinema, as it has always been the more popular art form, you know, the art form that people have more access to. Now, the works, in Havel's words, according to his letter to Husak, by imitating the real world, just falsify it, give a false picture of reality. They are hackneyed, trivial, and just reassure people with lies. So I won't be exaggerating if I say that almost 99% of the films produced in Iran now are the kind that Havel had in mind 40 or 50 years ago. And as he predicted, most of them are encouraged, or better to say, very encouraged in the 8 years that Ahmadinejad was in power. They're shallow and stupid stories that only try to scratch the surface, but they're not successful. They're not the kind of film like the typical Jafar Panahi or Asghar Farhadi film that most of the time are efforts to go deeper and show a more truthful picture of people's lives in Iran.
You have talked about filmmakers, Omid. I would like to remind a singer called Mohsen Namju, who was not a comfortable singer for the government of Iran, so he lives out of Iran now. Also, as Vera mentioned about Karar Kril, who was writing protest songs against the regime of former Czechoslovakia and had to emigrate to Germany. And we are listening to the songs of these two singers in our program. Omid, many Iranian artists use metaphor. What is the reason?
Not surprisingly, many artworks tended to use metaphors and symbols as opposed to a more direct and clear way of showing things. Because you can say a lot through symbolism without offending the state officials or censors. But after a while, the walls that the state builds around people, especially around the creative people, get closer to the artist. His world starts shrinking, getting smaller. He doesn't know what's happening outside those walls, or when he sees what's happening, especially in this age of the internet and mass communication, he doesn't get the context and the atmosphere because he's been cut off from the world for too long. He's missed the events. He's missed a part of history, just like a prisoner who sees the world only through the tiny window in his cell.
Yeah, this last sentence that you mentioned exactly is, I think, it's the similarity between these two countries that, in my studies, I could feel them strongly, these two similarities between Iran and Czech Republic, but in different time and era. Can you picture our society in case we'd have a total freedom in our social functions, speeches, and art?
You know, speaking your mind freely, just as an Iranian, I can feel it. It just doesn't happen overnight. You know, I don't think it's going to be easy because censorship lives on in our minds, especially in the minds of a people like the Iranians, who are usually bound by traditions and customs inside the family and society. There are many kinds of inhibitions on the level of family and society. So I don't think we're going to start expressing ourselves with no inhibitions as soon as the censorship agents are removed. You know, I've lived outside Iran for years now, but I still catch myself self-censoring from time to time. Not because someone or something forces me to, but because of the force of habit, because I was born and raised in a society so used to self-censorship. Freedom, I think, needs some getting used to, and this takes a long while. We need time to learn the rules of freedom, to learn to respect the freedom of others. as well, to learn that we should want for others what we want for ourselves.
Vera, how do you value the effect of freedom on artistic works after 1989?
I have to say we expected more in a free society. I think that the most successful today is a documentary film. For example, a couple of years ago, there was a best European documentary by Czech film director Helena Třeštíková. Yeah. Much worse is the situation in a feature film. And this is the very interesting crisis of storytelling. It looks like we have lost courage because we have to map the new reality, and it looks this is very, very difficult. Freedom of expression doesn't mean automatically freedom of expression. We have to learn to be free, not only as human beings in a new situation, but also to be free from any kind of these schemes and stereotypes, which doesn't allow neither flow of new ideas nor its critical selection.
Bratříčku, nevzlikej, neplítvej slzami, na dávky polikej a šetři silami. Nesmíš mi vyčítat, jestliže nedojdeme.
Barbara, what is your suggestion? How should we act in a society which doesn't live in freedom? You know, the censorship has had effect on generations. So how could we help with the healing process?
Yes, I think you're partly answering it yourself, because in my eyes, the priority is education.
Yes.
And I think Omid was right that over a long period of unfreedom, people are psychologically manipulated without even realizing that it's happening. And it's very difficult to unlearn this. And in this country, it was more than 40 years. So you had generations. You had teachers who'd been taught by teachers who'd been taught under the communist system. And it's really, really difficult. I've seen it, and it takes a long time. But I've also seen some very promising initiatives. I've seen people really starting ideas, being creative, getting students to think. And also important is travel, being able to have contact with the outside world and finding out that things can be done differently, plural ways of doing something. There's not just one method. I'm really encouraged when I compare the situation with how it used to be. I really think it's come a long way in this country.
Thank you so much for your suggestion. Omid, what is your solution as an Iranian journalist for the way of our effort to have more freedom?
As I said before, you know, it takes time to get used to freedom. And I agree with Barbara on this, that what you have in mind, you know, the answer to your question, just will happen through education, among other things. Iran has been under the rule of censorship for too long, and maybe many artists don't even know what freedom will bring with it. And even if they get rid of the outside forces, they are still going to have to fight the inside inhibitions, mm-hmm. the illusions they have in their minds. So it will be a process of trial and error in my mind. It is all
as we know, and also heard it from our guests in this studio, there are obstacles and opportunities on the way of living a free society while producing culture and art with high quality. I hope both, all of us and the next generations, anywhere in the world, will have the enthusiasm and power to build our freedom and learn how to appreciate it. Thanks for being with us in this program.
شده اسیر داغ